So this week's parasha is Parashat Bo. That's true. It was either that or saying, "Well, not according to the triennial system." I mean, it was one of two possible responses. So let's start with the first source, which is Perek Yud Bet, but the second paragraph, Pasuk Kaf Tet. V'yihi b'chatzi ha'layla. So we start at midnight. This is for Cinderella. It begins with midnight. V'yihi b'chatzi ha'layla v'Hashem hika kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim. Mi'b'chor paro ha'yoshev al kiso ad b'chor ha'shvi asher b'beit Tabor. V'chol b'chor b'hema. V'yekom paro layla hu v'chol avada v'chol Mitzrayim. So what happens is that every single house in Egypt is struck. The firstborn, not just people, animals, everything is struck. And let's continue. And Paro goes running off into the night, and this, we know, is the favorite song of the children in Gan in Israel, Paro with pajama, be'emtza halayla, Paro running around in his pajamas, looking around for Moshe and for Aaron. V'yikrala Moshe ula Aaron layla, kumu tzu'u mitoch ami, go and leave from my people, ki atem gam b'nei Yisrael, l'chuv du'at Hashem ki debrachem. Now, there is something interesting over here, because it sounds as if there is a conflicted message. We know that Am Yisrael are going to be leaving completely. We know that they're not coming back. Does Paro know that? Because over here, he says, go leave from my people, mitoch ami. It sounds as if he's saying to go completely, but then he falls back on the second part and go and serve your God. Gam tzonchem, gam bekarchem, chu kasher dibartem, v'lechu v'rechtem gamoti. And over here, he finally asks to be blessed as well. V'techazak Mitzrayim, instead of techazak adlev Paro, over here, it's the other. They girded themselves. Techazak Mitzrayim, Allah amlu maher l'shalcham in aretz, in order to throw them out. Ki amru kulanu metim, because they said, we'll add in one word. Otherwise, if they don't leave, we're all going to be dead. V'yisa amid bitzakot terem yachmatz, and here we have a hint of what's going to come up later in terms of the matzah. Misharotam tzurot b'simlatam al shechmam. And they had the dough with them, but it had not yet risen. Uvnei Yisrael asu kidvar Moshe, and Bnei Yisrael did as Moshe had instructed. Vishalumi Mitzrayim klei kesef klei zav usmalot, and they borrowed silver, gold, and dresses or clothing. Although smalot was not mentioned earlier, so it's a little ironic. They did what was told, but they were not told about the smalot. They were told about the other things. So we'll just leave that as a question for the moment. The other question, which is far more important, and we're going to be getting ahead of ourselves right now, when it says that they did what Moshe had told them to do, V'nei Yisrael su kedvar Moshe, is everything that's been reported to us right now, is it sequential, or is it a general report, a checklist of this was done, and this was done, and this was done? Because there's a big difference in saying it's sequential versus just this was done at some point. Well, I'll get more to my point. After midnight, Paro comes running, looking for Moshe, and says, leave. So at that point, essentially, between midnight and dawn, is that when Am Yisrael are running around and borrowing the various things? Or had this been done at an earlier point? Now, that may not sound like such an important question, but I think it's an important question. But as you read it, it doesn't occur to you. As you read it, you just assume that the sequence that it's that we're being told is how things happened. So again, that verse as well. So when exactly did that take place? And Am Yisrael traveled. So again, our question comes up, so when is this verse? Right? When does this take place exactly? Because the last time reference that we've received was Pasuk Kaf Tet, V'yihi b'chatzi ha'layla, at midnight. So are all of these things being described to us as midnight until we're told any other time frame? Or these are just all the things that happened and completely abandon any kind of a sequential understanding? V'yisu b'nei Yisrael miramzei sukkot, k'sheish me'ot elef raglei hagvim levad mitov, v'gam erev rav ala itam. Now that's quite interesting. Later on, the erev rav will become our favorite people, because you always need someone to blame, right, for everything that goes wrong, till this day. It's the erev rav. You'd be surprised who some people assume is the identity of the modern-day erev rav. V'gam erev rav ala itam v'tzonu v'kar mikneh kaved ma'od. So who exactly are these people, the erev rav, that are coming with them? V'yafu ata batzeka sheritzim mitzrayim. So they baked the dough which they had taken out of Egypt. Ugot matzot kilochametz. Ki goshu mitzrayim v'lo chlut mameya. Because they were chased out of Egypt. So this sounds like we're going back when power goes get out. And, you know, they force them out. V'gam tzeh de lo asu lahem. And they had no other provisions. Umoshav bnei Yisrael shu Mitzrayim shloshim shana v'arba mot shana v'hi miketz shloshim shana v'arba mot shana v'hi be'etzem hayom hazeh. So also, that's an interesting turn of phrase, be'etzem hayom hazeh. So are we at night or a day? What is etzem hayom hazeh means on that day or that day? Right? If that distinction is clear. Does it mean daylight or on that particular day? Be'etzem hayom hazeh. Yotzu kol tzvot Hashem me'eretz Mitzrayim. Leil shimurim hu. So now we went back to our evening. Leil Shimurim Hu LaHashem LaHotzi'am MiEretz Mitzrayim. It was an evening of, how do you want to translate Shimurim? Of protection. An evening of protection for God, LaHotzi'am MiEretz Mitzrayim, which then takes us back to our confusion. So did they leave at night or did they leave in the morning? Leil Shimurim LaHotzi'am. LaHotzi'am is a result or is LaHotzi'am is a process? Lahotziam means to take them out, but when did they actually leave? So I'm just pointing out over here that there is perhaps a little confusion. Who, right, who? Halayla hazeh Hashem shimurim l'chol b'nei Yisrael l'dorotam. And this becomes a night where we are protected for all generations, which is why there's a custom not to say Kriyat Shema Alamita on Pesach night. Source number two, which will deal with the question which I raised, so exactly when did they leave? So this is Avot Rebbe Natan. It's not the only place this idea is mentioned. Avot Rebbe Natan, for those of you who don't know, is sort of like a Tosefta or a Braita on Pirkei Avot. It's, I guess, analogous to a Gemara on Pirkei Avot. It is quite interesting. It's has a lot of information that it could be that you heard snippets here or there, and is a worthwhile text to pursue. Although I suspect until there is a Schottenstein edition, many people will stay away from it. Source 2. Uminayin sheniftar mimenu bekavod. And how do you know the Jews left with dignity? Which, of course, you could have said, I didn't know they left with dignity. So how do you know they left with dignity? Shenemar v'yikra l'moshe l'aron laila v'yomer kumu tzu mitoch ami. Because Paru summons them and says, come, leave my people. Amru lo. So here we have Moshe's response, which the Torah doesn't give us. Ganavim anu? Are we thieves? Shenetze belaila? That we're going to go sneaking around in the night? Elohim tin lanu ad shiavon lanu kodesh baruch hu. We're going to wait for God to pick us up. God said he's sending a taxi. Husheva ananei kavod. Until the ananei kavod show up. Not a taxi, a limousine. Vinetze bahem besimcho uvarosh galui. And we're going to be leaving with joy, and we're going to be leaving. Berosh Galoy means out in the open. We're not sneaking around in the night. Shenemar, as it says, Mimachrata Pesach Yatzu Bnei Yisrael Biyad Rama. If you want to see that verse, look at source number 9 for the moment, where it says Vayasumi Ramses, the Jews left Ramses b'Chodesh Harishon b'Chamishasa Yom l'Chodesh Harishon. Mimachrat haPesach, that may be very important, the day after the Pesach, Yatzu bnei Yisrael biyad rama la'enei kol Mitzrayim. So here you have a verse, black and white, when they left in the morning, mimachrat haPesach. If you go down to source number 12, the Chizkuni tells us, what does mimachrat haPesach mean? So this is something which a number of modern scholars have pointed out. I don't know if they bothered to quote the Chizkuni. Right. So I said, I don't know if they quoted the Chizkuni on this. In modern day language, Pesach is referred to the 7-day holiday. The Chumash never does that. The Chumash is very consistent that the Pesach is only the Korban Pesach. It's only the night before. And here you see the Chizkuni say it very clearly. Vayasumi Ramses b'chodesh Rishon b'chamisha sayom, right? Source 12. Lo huzarubi Mitzrayim al yom tov rak michametz laila Rishon. They did not have in Egypt a 7-day holiday. That year they only had that one night. B'machrata Pesach, what does it mean the day after the Pesach? Yom tetvav, that's on the 15th. V'laila harishon nikra Pesach, the previous evening was called Pesach. Al shem she'oskim b'korban she'nikra kin, because that refers to the offering which was called Pesach. V'rayala davar miparshat emor miparshat pinchas, av'al shara chag milel rishon ve'elech nikra chag matzot. And if you go, and Chizkuni is correctly pointing out, look at all the other times that Pesach or Chag HaMatzot are mentioned, and you're going to find it's quite consistent in Parshat Emor and Parshat Pinchas, that the time of the bringing and the offering of the Pesach is called Pesach, while the 7-day holiday is called Chag HaMatzot, and over here, Mimachrat HaPesach is when they left the next morning. So that is what was referred to in the Avot Rabbi Natan. In source number 3, the same thing is mentioned in Midrash Agadah. Hayaholech b'layla u'mechazer b'shvakim, as the night goes on, Paro is running around through the marketplaces. V'omer, heichan Moshe Sharoi, where is Moshe? Now, this is an interesting point, because does Paro, again, this is Paro b'pajama b'mtzalayla, Paro is running around looking for Moshe. One could have assumed that Paro summons Moshe, although we do keep in mind that he had said, you're not going to see me again, so what exactly does that mean? Again, is that absolute terms, you're never going to see me again, or I'm never coming to you again? You want to see me, you're going to have to come over here. So he goes looking around, and the Jewish people made sport of him. They were having fun with Paro. Go here, look around, right? Ot chamesh takot, and yashar, yashar, and all kinds of other, either intended or not. Kevin Shematz Am, when Paro finally finds them, Moshe and Aaron, Amar lem kumu tzu mitochami, tzu l'shalom, l'chu l'shalom, go. Amar lem Moshe, Russia. So this is, you have to enjoy whoever wrote this midrash finally got to add that in, you wicked person. V'chi ganavim anu, sh'netzei b'layla? Are we crooks? We're gonna go in the middle of the night? Kach tzivalan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But God already said, now this I want you to keep in mind, because this may color everything else, V'atem lo titzu ish mipetach beto ad boker. Ah. So hold on to that a second, because that may actually have been important. And therefore he says, Amar lo paro b'vakasha mimcha kumu tzu mitoch ami. Hare atem b'nei chorin, ad achshav hayitem avadim li. V'raditi bachem, mikan ve'elech atem ovdei Hashem. You are free. You have no response. Again, this makes it absolute. You're free. Not go for 3 days. You're free. You now serve God. You don't no longer need to serve me. Source 4 in the Mechilta, the Rashbi, v'yikra Moshe la'aron laila yachobo etzlo, v'alok farnema, v'atem lo tetsu ish mipetach beto ad boker. Again, the same consideration. It says you can't leave. Elamalamid shehitzitzu mitoch guzat tera, v'omer lo b'layla ein ani yotzin, ani yotzin b'chatzi hayom. It's also just added a couple of things. One is that according to this Mechilta Rashbi, Moshe and Aaron don't leave the house. They look through the keyhole, they look through the little hole. You look who's at the door. Who's there? Paro. Okay, go away. Go away. And he says, "We're not leaving now. God said we can't leave." But what? Which is exactly the point. You don't serve me. You serve God. Okay. God said we can't leave. You say leave, but so who are we really serving? If we listen to you and go now, so that means we're not listening to what God said. So it could be that we never paid attention to this tension before, because there's actually apparently contradictory instructions. Paro says go, and God says don't go. As I said, I'm not sure if you've noticed that. But the last couple of words of the Mechilta is also interesting. He said, we're only going when? B'chatzi hayom. So where did the Chatzi Hayom come from? We're going at high noon. We're going at high noon. We're not going at midnight. We're not going at 3 a.m. We're not the kind of people who are running around at 3 o'clock in the morning. How many of you have ever said this to your children? Right? Rather, high noon. High noon is when we are leaving, where it's going to be completely, completely clear. Let's go back to see what it's referring to, and that's source number 1. Al tachlu mimenu na umavashel. These are the instructions of the Korban Pesach. Al tachlu mimenu na uvashel mevushel b'mayin, ki imtzli esh Rosho Akarov Al Kirbo. How are you going to eat it? You're not going to eat it cooked. Rather, you're going to eat it when it's going to be roasted. So any of you who are intrigued with this, so as is very well known, sometimes I put pictures up of what I cook on the grill, and sometimes I put up on what I cook in the oven on Facebook. So whoever follows me, we have thousands of people who've offered to come to us for Shabbos as a result of these pictures. But what's the difference between the two different types of cooking? So everybody should know this, that there are certain types of meat that you're going to put on the grill, and it's going to cook relatively quickly. You're going to cook one side, cook the other side. If you really wanted to cook inside, which is not the way that you cook these things, because you do want them to be more rare than well done, otherwise you understand nothing about all of this, so then you would have to lower the temperature a little bit. But generally, cooking on the fire is going to be very quick, and that's the whole point. This is fast food, not fast food in the time, in that type of fast food. On the other hand, if you cook something in a liquid, so it's not just that you have to heat up the liquid, but it's slower cooking. So there's certain types of meat that you're going to want, and if you want recipes, I'm very happy to supply. But that's going to be a different type of cooking. So that's going to be a very, very, on a low flame, very, very slow, very, very deliberate type of cooking. So even with a modern day oven or stove, so there's certain types of meats that you're going to want to cook for 3, 4, or 5 hours in order to get them to their perfection. So what are we being told over here? We're not cooking, we're roasting. Tzli ish. This is already going to be a question of expressing a theme which will be very, very clear as we continue, and that theme is one of speed. It continues and it says Tzli ish v'lo tatirimenu ad boker v'no tatirimenu ad boker be'esh tisrofu. The kacha tochlu, and this is how you eat it. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Matnechem chagurim, nalechem beraglechem, aklechem biyadchem. You're going to eat it. You're going to have your coat on. You're going to have your shoes on. You're going to have your walking sticks in hand, or stick in hand. V'achaltem oto bichipazon, and you're going to eat it. And this is going to be a key word for today. Bichipazon. What does chipazon mean?
Fast,
quickly. You're going to, without delay. You're going to eat it bichipazon. Why? Pesach u'lashem. Because this is Pesach. So the Pesach is eaten b'chipazon. It's almost like a definition. And you can't eat, you can't leave it over, b'chipazon. This is the Pesach. V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh, and I am going to pass through Egypt on that night. V'hiketi kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim mi'adam v'ad behema v'chol Elohim Mitzrayim aseh shvatim, ani Hashem. I am going to pass through Egypt on that night. And the end of Pasukov Bed, Ulakhtam Ugudate Zov, Utovaltum Adamashir Basaf, Yigatama Mashkov, Ashtea Mizizot, Minhadamashir Basaf. It almost sounds like the doorpost has just now become the Mizbeach. While you bring a korban, you put the blood around on the Mizbeach, now you're putting it on the door. It's as if you've just now designated the door into being a Mizbeach. But then the house being a Mizbeach. And then it finishes up. Atem, you Lo tetsu ish mi petach beito ad boker, but you do not cross through that doorway with the blood, which has now become the mizbeach. You cannot leave it till the morning. The food can't be eaten; will have to be burnt in the morning. Which means, as much as midnight, you know, we start our Cinderella, but the pumpkin moment. What is this? The moment over here is actually dawn. Dawn is the key moment. Till dawn, you can't leave. Until dawn, anything which will be eaten needs to be eaten. On the other hand, we have this other factor, which is midnight. So let's try to stop all this and avoid all of our potential confusion with our timeline over here. And there are many things that we don't know. We know that we're being told already 2 weeks before to start making your Pesach preparations. On Rosh Chodesh, that's the beginning of Perek Yud Bet, on Rosh Chodesh, God speaks to Moshe and to Aaron and gives the instructions. Okay, point number one. They're told on the 10th day of the month to take the lamb, they take it. They're told to keep it for 4 days. On the 14th in the afternoon is when they're going to slaughter that lamb. They're going to roast it in the evening. They're going to put the blood on the doorpost, and they're going to sit then in their homes until they need to, now we're just told, they need to sit in their homes until morning. At midnight, God is going to come, and God is going to strike the Egyptians, and that is when we're going to have Makat Bechorot. So that is at midnight. So in the various midrashim, we find, again, based on the psukim now, that Paro comes running around looking for Moshe. So does he find him? So if he found him, then presumably, like the Midrashim said, he had to go to his house, because Moshe is under instruction, like all the other Jews, not to leave his house. On the other hand, some of you would argue, hold it, Paro said to leave, we have an opportunity to leave, this is pikuach nefesh, right? You leave, right? You don't wait any longer. You know, there was, when some of the Jews got out of Germany and Poland, and they made their way to Shanghai, and then to Kobe, so there was an opportunity to get on a boat. But if they would have gotten on that boat, then it would have possibly crossed the international dateline over Yom Kippur. And then they may have had to keep 2 days Yom Kippur. So they said, why get into such questions? Before I finish the story, Rav Chaim Volozhin was once asked, if a Jew lives in the North Pole, what should he do about sunrise, sunset, Shabbos, this? So his answer was, a Jew shouldn't live on the North Pole, which is... I don't know if you need Rav Chaim Volozhin to tell you that. You shouldn't live on the North Pole. So the same kind of sensibility was, why do we need this? Why do we need to cross through where we may have the dateline problems, which, by the way, all of Japan is dateline, well, Kobe was, and all of Australia's date. New Zealand is not a problem, just they all keep the wrong day, which is quite ironic. There's a Jewish community in Christchurch in New Zealand, which should be keeping Shabbos on Sunday. Right? There's a Hebrew congregation of Christchurch, which should keep Shabbos on Sunday. But anyway, I didn't say anything. So they had the opportunity of getting on this boat. They said, you know what, let's just leave it. And the next boat was after December 7th. Some of you probably remember December 7th. 1941. Well, some of you remember it. And they ended up getting stuck there for another couple of years because they waited for the next boat. You know, sometimes you don't wait for the next boat. Sometimes you get a chance to get out, you go, and you'll say, oh, listen, it's, you know, Shabbos is over, Rabbeinu Tam, another couple of minutes. They said, no, you go. You have an opportunity of leaving slavery, you go. But there's a problem. The problem is, it's a religious problem. So who are we slaves to? Are we slaves to Paro? Are we slaves to God? Paro said to go, so then how do we go? I mean, please appreciate, and I'm afraid to use the phrase, the first act. There's many, many aspects of redemption, and maybe that's really what we need to notice. There's many, many steps over here towards redemption. One step towards redemption is the killing of the lamb and the sheep, especially according to those that this is something which was worshipped in Egypt. So therefore, the actual killing it and putting the blood outside, that itself is liberating. Now, not every act of liberation is completely liberating, frees you, but it's an act of liberation nonetheless. Notice another thing. From the very beginning, God said to Moshe, ask for 3 days. And the stated intention for those 3 days was to serve God. We want to have a holiday. We want to have a vacation. But not a regular vacation. We've been working for hundreds of years, and we want to serve our God. Let us go serve God. And Paro says no. So now they're serving God, which means what they've been asking for at the very beginning, now they're doing it. Now they're serving God. But what's the difference? Paro didn't let them go, so they're doing it in Egypt. Sometimes you have to serve God. So that's also what's interesting. They're serving God now in Egypt, so that itself may be somewhat defiant of Paro and having the Pesach Seder itself that night. Now the other elements over here, which maybe we'll talk more about, is what God instructs, and that is not just to serve it, and not just with the blood, which itself is probably very liberating, but also eat it with your coats on, with your shoes on, with your... Now, there's a little contradiction here, or at least a tension, meaning put everything on, because you're leaving any second. On the other hand, but don't leave your house till the morning. So I'm saying there's a little... We're going any second, but you're not going till the morning. So there is this feeling of preparation to leave, but even though they're told they can't leave till the morning, and you don't realize what is the importance of saying you can't leave till the morning until Paro goes and says, well, you're free. So the first act of freedom, the first act of freedom that Moshe does is saying to Paro, no, we're not going, but I told you to go. You're not in charge anymore. Which, right, this is like when Sharansky, if you read his book, when Sharansky finally left the Soviet Union, they told him, the last thing they said was, cross over this bridge directly. And right, so he zigzagged. Just, I mean, the whole thing, he tells how many mind games that he would play with them along the way, but over here as well, they're saying, you have to do it like this, and he said, no, I'm not doing it like this. If that's going to make you happy, I'll do it a different way. So over here as well, you look at Moshe, according to the Midrash, we're not going at night. But it's not just that Moshe saying it, it's Kadosh Baruch Hu said it. And that's what was identified in some of the sources. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you can't leave until the morning. Which, again, anybody over here, I get the sense, but we finally can leave, okay, all bets are off, go, but that seems to be exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going on, right? He knows he's striking them at midnight. He knows that there's going to be this incredible response once people start dying. And nonetheless, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, but you're waiting till the morning. Okay, so let's, as I said, keep that in mind and proceed. Korban Pesach, we'll see about that. We'll see about that. The Korban Pesach was the evening before. When it was eaten. We'll see. Hold on. Source number 5. Dover Achke v'yihi b'chatzi alayla. So here's a Midrash and Midrash Rabbah, which his starting point is, and it happened by midnight. Let's skip a little bit further down. V'heketi kol b'chor, in the third line. Hitchilu mehem yireim v'yeshvam shalom ityarim. Among the Egyptians, there were some who were afraid and some who weren't afraid. Which ones were afraid? Those who've been reading the news for the last 9 makot should have been quite afraid. Or for that matter, those who were firstborn should have been quite afraid. It could be some of the younger siblings saying, I don't know, let's take the chance, it's okay. Misha Yamit Yare, who was really afraid, Hayam Molich Bichoro Eitzel Yisrael, would bring his kid over to the Jewish house. So it's interesting, you know, we have this whole thing, we borrow the clothing, we borrow the gold, we borrow the silver, you didn't realize they borrowed the kids. So over here it says that they would bring the kids there. Now, how exactly would that work? Before we read the rest of the Midrash, how would this work based upon the Chumash? What did the Chumash say that God did? He passed over, he struck the house of Egyptians, and he passed over the Jewish homes. So based on this information, this should have worked. Right? This is a plan. This should have worked. There's another thing, though, that we, at least on the Midrashic sense, and then later on, at some point in the plague, in the Pshat sense, where it says that this happened in Egypt, but it didn't happen for the Jews. So already by the first plague, there are Midrashim. Again, this is not Pshat in the Chumash. There are Midrashim that say that a cup of water, which a Jew had, would have been water, but if an Egyptian took it, it would have been blood. There's some Midrashim that say it would have been blood, unless the Jew sold it to him. If the Jew sold it and made some money, so then, meaning we had water concessions during that first plague. And there is, I believe, one expression of it even that if there was one cup of water and 2 straws in it, very romantic, but if the Jew was drinking, water would come out, but if the Egyptian was drinking, then blood would come out. But as I said, none of that's in the Chumash. Later on, we're going to find some of the plagues where we have the distinction going on in Eretz Goshen, no, by Mitzrayim proper, yes. But over here, so what happens with Makat B'Charot? Is it a question of God distinguishing between, is it the Heftz or the Gavra? Is it between the homes of the Jews and the homes of the non-Jews, which, as I said, is closer to the Pshat, or is it the, or at least a simple reading of Pshat, or is it the firstborn of the Egyptians versus the firstborn of the Jews? And what happens when you try to fool God, right? You can't fool, right? Can't fool Mother Nature, right? You can't fool God. So what happens when you take the Egyptian kids and put them in the Jewish homes? So let's look at least of one expression of this. Source number 5. V'amr lo b'vakasha mimcha tol et ze v'yalin imach, kevin shigia chatzia layla, Haraga Kadosh Baruch Hu kol ha-becharot. God killed all the firstborn. Va'otam shahayu nitunim bivateim shay Yisrael. Yakadosh Baruch Hu posea bein Yisrael ubein ha-mitzrim. Va'yonotel nishmato shel mitzri umeniach nishmato shay Yisrael. That God went and nonetheless was not fooled and killed the Egyptians and saved the Jews. Va'hayu dimit orer. And the Jew would wake up in the morning. Umatziya to mitzri meit and find the dead Egyptian right there. Bin kol achad v'achad. Shenemar, it's also a very interesting thing. You'd imagine many people sleeping that night because they had to travel in the morning. Upasachti aleihem v'lo yebochem negav. Yitchilu Yisrael amrim chatzot laila akum lodot lach l'kach nemar al mishpatei tzedkecha. So again, this is playing the whole thing out exactly by midnight. The Mechilta d'Rashbi again in source number 6. Ki amru kolanu meitim amru Moshe amar lanu b'charot meitim. But anuroin shemaitim b'charot v'she'ena b'charot. So over here, this is taking a little swipe at the Egyptian morality. it says that the Egyptians started complaining against Moshe that more people died. It wasn't just the firstborn that died. Other people died as well, and they complained to Moshe. You said the firstborn are going to die, but other people are dying also. Again, number Moshe. Amarnu lanu b'charot meitim v'anu ro'um shemeitim b'charot v'she'enu b'charot. V'hein enam yodim shekulam shutim v'zima, but they didn't realize how immoral Egypt was. Echad ba al eser nashim, you had one man who had relations with 10 different women. V'yoldu lo eser banim nimtzu kulam b'chorei nashim. And each one of them was the firstborn of those women. And you also had situations of Asara anashim ba'ol al isha echad. 10 different men had relations with one woman, the Yoldula Esara banim, and she had 10 children, Nimsu kulam b'chorei anashim, and each of them was the firstborn of those men. Lekach amru kolanu meitim, and says everybody's dying. So over here, as I said, it picks on Egyptian morality also, and said that all bunch of people dying that nobody realized were necessarily had the status of the firstborn. Source number 7, which we won't read, is another midrash where Paro says, calls Moshe, and Moshe says, am I going to you or are you coming to me? So again, this is also an expression of some type of liberation at that point. I mean, until now it's Moshe coming to the palace and having to beg in front of the king, and now it's the king looking for Moshe. So again, this is an expression of how the tables have now turned. And I want to say this again, that on that night, there are various expressions of liberation. One expression of liberation is when the king comes looking over here for, or Paro comes looking over here for Moshe. Source number 8. So this is interesting. Before Naomi said, I don't know if all of you heard, we said about the Egyptians coming and hiding with the Jews, and then perhaps they thought they would be safe, so during the Holocaust we had Jews who tried to hide with non-Jews, and all that ended up happening is that instead of them just being killed, it also put the whole non-Jewish family in a precarious situation. But keeping that in mind, look at number 8 now. Kach Elokim asa simcha l'Yisrael shega'ala amar Elokim kimisha ohevet et b'ni Yavo v'yismach im bini. Whoever feels happy about the Exodus taking place, come and celebrate with us. Haksherim sheba Mitzrayim, the decent folk in Egypt, bo v'asu Pesach im Yisrael v'alu imahim. They celebrated Pesach together with the Jews and they left with them, and that's the Erev Rav. So according to this matter, the Erev Rav were the people who realized that this is a just movement, who realized that this is the correct thing, who realized that the slavery was wrong, and not only that, they said, we feel so happy with you, we want to celebrate with you, and they partook of the Pesach. So I know that in terms of Hilchos Pesach, Kol Aral, who are, later on we're going to find out that non-Jews and all can't participate in the Korban Pesach. This Midrash is saying, yeah, all that is subsequent Korban Pesach, but the first year in the Korban Pesach, it's before Matan Torah, before formal Jewish identity in any sense, and therefore, who is a Jew, according to this? Yeah, that point, very postmodern, right? Who is a Jew at this point? A Jew is anybody who feels happy with what's going on with the Jews and wants their destiny to be with the Jews. And therefore, those are the ones who were taken out. So that's, I think, a very interesting... And that's what it says, and that's the Erev Rav. As it says, She'enemar v'gam Erev Rav ala itam. V'kol mi sheratzu shelo yigalu Yisrael, and anybody who didn't want the Jews to be saved, metu im habachorim, they died together with the firstborn. Again, we're going to have more dead people than we know what to do with, according to this, and we have no one left to kill in the water afterwards. But nonetheless, as I said, I think this midrash is interesting. We'll skip a little bit further down. Amr lo elokim b'layla tamotzi et banai, lo totzi levanai b'layla, eli yetzu b'rosh galui b'chatzi hayom. So again, that's that same expression that, no, they're going to leave actually at noon. Okay, so let's... So what did they then do? So it's very interesting. This midrash says, so what did the Jews do? They didn't leave at night, but what did they do? They all went all over the place. What did they do when they ran all over the place? Keeping in mind, it says they're not allowed to leave their homes. Shenemar v'nei Yisrael sukat var Moshe v'yishalum imitzrayim. Moshe osek batzmot Yosef v'kli ha-mishkan shechin Yaakov avinu v'chein David amar yismach tzadik chazak nakam. So according to this midrash, it's all, remember I asked before, is everything is sequential? It says, yeah, it's sequential. That they ate the Korban Pesach, the firstborn is struck, Paro says go, we're not leaving until the morning, but something else does happen between now and the morning, and what's that? The Jews go running around, collecting all of their back pay with interest for all of the work that they've been doing, and that's the barring of the gold and the silver. So you have one problem with that. It just said not to leave the house. So here it says that they left the... Listen, not to leave the house is one thing, but if you can get some free gold, it's another thing. I mean... which religion are you? So, okay. So now, moving back to the pasuk that we read before, this is a pasuk in the end of Bamidbar, which talks about the various masaot, the various travelings that the Jews did. So what was the first travel, the first leg of the trip? Is source number 9, which we read before. V'yisumi Ramses b'chodesh ha-rishon v'chamishah sayom l'chodesh ha-rishon mimachor ha-pesech ha-tzu b'nei Yisrael b'yad ramah l'nei kol Mitzrayim. So when did they leave? They left the next day. They did not leave that night. They did not leave at midnight. They left the next day. We'll read the Targum Yonatan in Hebrew in source 11. V'yisumin Ram says b'chodesh shel Nisan b'chamishah sayom l'chodesh run me'acharei she'achlu zevach ha-pesach. So Esther, to answer your question, after they had finished eating the Pesach, which means it says me'machor ta'pesach, after they ate the Pesach, yotzu b'nei Yisrael b'farhesya le'eneihem shel kol Mitzrayim. They left out in the open, out in the clear, that everybody can see. That's the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah is understood as b'farhesya. So that is our pseudo Yonatan. We saw 12. Rav Hirsch does even get a number. Rav Hirsch, right, didn't get a number, 12 and a half. Mimochwara Pesach below Belaila. Belaila Hushlama Hagu'ula Imota Bechorim. At night, what does Hushlama Gu'ula mean? The redemption was completed. Ach Hayitziah Haitala Oryom. But leaving was during the day. So what he's playing with over here is he's arbitrarily, or not, using two different terms. One is, when was the redemption in Egypt? And two, when was Yitziat Mitzrayim? So therefore, we have, according to this, Geulat Mitzrayim and Yitziat Mitzrayim. And this, for those who remember, or for those who don't, it's an involved Gemara in a number of places. We're going to look at the first place it's mentioned in Shas, and that is the Gemara in Brachot. The Gemara Brachot is more dealing with issues of prayer and what we say at different times. Do we talk about Yitziat Mitzrayim at night or not? Remember, that even makes its way into the Haggadah. But there's another issue, which is a back issue, which I'll just mention it like this. Till when can you eat the Korban Pesach? So, till when can you eat the Korban Pesach? So, till everything that we've seen so far by looking at the Chumash, it sounds like it's till dawn. We're told that anything that remains by dawn has to be burnt, so therefore, by definition, is it that you can, well, you have to finish it by dawn, or is there some kind of earlier time? So let's take a look, and it's a machloket. Good, that's the right answer for everything. In the Haggadah. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at source 13. Ditanya, we learned in a braita, v'chlu at the basar b'layla hazeh, you should eat the Korban Pesach that night. So, of course, part of the problem now is, what does night mean? Yeah, only Jews, by the way, can have questions like this. So what is night? Sorry if I offended any of you. V'chlu at the basar b'layla hazeh. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer, Nemar kan belaila hazeh, v'nemar lahalim v'varti v'eretz Yitzrayim belaila hazeh. So in reference to the punishment of the firstborn, God says, I'm going to go through Egypt that night, even though there's a very particular moment of that night. So Elizabeth Azari then is assuming that these two moments are the same. That midnight, when the firstborn are struck, and till which point can you eat the Korban Pesach, is the same moment. Ma lahalim ad chatzot, just like there, God struck the firstborn by chatzot, afkan ad chatzot, and therefore Elazar ben Azariah concludes that the Korban Pesach can only be eaten until chatzot. Now, just a warning, we once had a whole class on this a couple of years ago, chatzot is not such a big thing in Judaism. Midnight, per se, is not, I'm not saying it never occurs in any place, I'm just saying it's not such a thing. Many, many times where it talks about chatzot in halacha, it's talking it only as a din drabanan in order to protect us from going any further. Chatzot is not such a big thing when it comes to the middle of the night. So just keeping that in mind. But Elazar ben Azariah says it is a thing. And the reason he says it is a thing, because God struck the Egyptians at midnight. So therefore as well, let me put it this way. In terms of the regular rules of the Beit HaMikdash, which maybe that's not fair for me to do right now. In terms of the regular rules of the Beit HaMikdash, Chatzot is not a factor in any other halacha. Chatzot at night, Chatzot of the day maybe is, but Chatzot in terms of the Korban Mincha, or what would be the Tamid Bein Arbayim, but Chatzot at night is not a function of anything else. Matter of fact, the Beit HaMikdash was shut. The doors were shut at night. There was nothing that took place at night. Whatever was left on Mizbeach may still be ebbing into the night, but there was nothing that was done at night, so therefore midnight was not really of any significance. But over here he's claiming that the eating of this korban, which by the way, there's no other eating of a korban which ends at Chatzot. Korbanot can generally be into the morning or to the second morning even. But you don't have korbanot that midnight suddenly, okay, glass slipper or whatever, I have to read more. Okay. Omer le Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva responds to Lezvin Azari, and he says, V'lo kfar nerma b'chipazon. But it says chipazon in terms of the context of eating the Korban Pesach. Ad shat chipazon, until the time of chipazon. Now, what exactly is the time of chipazon? Im kein, ma tamad loma b'layla, yochol yehei nechol ki kodshim b'yom. Maybe you would think it's like all other kodshim that could be eaten until the morning. Tamad lomar b'layla, b'laylu nechol v'lo b'yom. So Rabbi Akiva understands that the Korban Pesach is different from other korbanot, that it's only till the first morning, but it's till the morning. Unlike Elizabeth Azari, he only says it's till Chatzot. So yes, we are very often machmir to eat the afikomen before Chatzot, according to Elizabeth Azari, which doesn't necessarily mean that the halach is like Elizabeth Azari. Elizabeth Azari says this is a din from the Torah, it's a din d'oraisa, in order to eat until Chatzot. So it could be that we do it like Reuven ben Azariah, but we only do it as a chumer midrabanan in order to avoid getting into a problem by going too late. Which means, at which point do you realize that you can no longer be eating it? That moment when suddenly the day, when it dawned, and now it just got too late suddenly. So therefore, to avoid that problem, so they set up Chatzot. So that would make a big difference. Do we do it according to Reuven ben Azariah? Because theoretically, according to Elizabeth and Azariah, not only do you only eat the Korban Pesach till Chatzot, then theoretically the whole Seder should end by Chatzot. So we don't end the Seder by Chatzot. We do other things after Chatzot as well. So that's what I'm saying, is that what we do may not mean all that much, especially because we don't have Korbanot today. But let's continue. We'll skip a little bit. Ad Moed Sidcha Mimitzrayim, until the time that we left Egypt. Amar Rabbi Abba Hakol Modim, again, four or five lines down in the middle of the line, Ad Moed Sidcha Mimitzrayim, to the time that you left Egypt. Just to get a little reference to this, for a second, we're going to come right back. Look at source 18, Devarim Ted Zayin, Shemor Chodesh Aviv Asita Pesach LaShem Elokecha, Ki B'Chodesh Aviv Otziyacha Hashem Elokecha Mitzrayim Laila, because God took us out at night. Now that's a little bit of a problem, considering everything else that we said. I just want you to realize this. The whole problem that we have today, this is not me. This is that we have three different psukim, which give us different insight. We have a pasuk here that says that God took us out laila. We had another pasuk that said, mimachrat ha-pesach, which means they left during the day. That's exactly the problem the Gemara now is going to deal with. Top of page 3, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines in the middle of the page. Right, Ad Moed Sidcha Mimitzrayim. Amar Rabbi Abba, Hakol Modim. Everyone agrees. Kishenigalu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. When the Jews were redeemed from Egypt. Now, notice which word did it use? What word? Nigalu. When they were redeemed, Lo Nigalu Ela Be'erev. Be'erev is interesting. They were redeemed Be'erev. So when is Be'erev? Technically, when is Be'erev? When they are eating the Korban Pesach. Okay, we can argue whether the bringing of the korban, eating the korban, what exactly be'erev means. Okay, good. Be'erev. Shenemar hotziach Hashem Elokecha b'Mitzrayim laila. So now, it just now brought the proof of erev by using the word laila. So that itself, for any of you who are pedantic, should be quite disturbed. Ukishiyatsu, as opposed to nigalu, leaving Yitziat Mitzrayim as opposed to Geulat Mitzrayim, when they left, Kishayatsu Layatsu Elabiyom, Shinemar Mimachrada Pesach, Yatsu Bnei Yisrael Biyad Ramah. Alma Nechlaku, what's the whole argument? Al Shata Chipazon, what exactly is the moment of Chipazon? Now, again, what did the word Chipazon mean? Rushing, moving quickly. Rav Elazar ben Azariah Savar, Mai Chipazon? Chipazon de Mitzrayim. When all the Egyptians were running around at midnight, because of the death of the firstborn. So he understood that the chipazon means they're running around. Rabbi Akiva suffer my chipazon, chipazon to Yisrael. When the Jews started to run, when the Jews started to run, when they left in the morning. So that's the whole question of what chipazon means. Which is asking on the pasuk, what does it mean that they left at night? The beginning of the Geula was already at night, which really is telling us that, according to the Gemara, we have a process of redemption. The process of redemption has many, many parts to it. We have the night before, we have the bringing of the Korban, the eating of the Korban, we have midnight Makat B'chorot, we have the dawn of the day, and we have that moment when they left, which could have all the way been all the way till Chatzot. And we've seen now, I think, a large amount of choices which have been presented to us. Going back, I want you to read again the first source, Perek Yud Bet Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'kacha tochlu oto matnechem chagorim na'aleichem baragleichem aklechem biyedchem v'chaltem oto b'chipazon pesachu l'ashem. So the main part that I'm concerned with right now is the second pair. Again, it's also, again, it's contradictory. Put your shoes on, have your walking staff, put your coat on, but you can't leave. So what is that? So what in the world do you call that? Well, is that anticipation is a wonderful word. Anticipation. It's anticipation, but it's getting, that's part of leaving, which means at which point did your guest leave your house? Right? Is it when they put on the coat? Yeah, well, the goodbyes could take 25 minutes. I mean, more even. I mean, so is it when they put their coat on? Is it when they left? You know, when they start leaving? I mean, Jews have turned leaving into a... it's a process. Can you continue this on the other side of the door? I just want to close the door right now. Stu's laughing a little too much here. Okay. So it's interesting because get everything onto that's the anticipation. On the other hand, but when is the actual leaving? So let's take a look at the Targum now, which is in source 14, which is, or 15 we'll read, which is on that Pasuk. V'kacha helachto, this is the instructions, the laws. Tochlu oto bizman hazeh v'lo ludorot, this is only a one-time thing in Egypt, you do it like this. Matnechem yucha gorim, or chamushim, which is interesting. Now lechem beraglechem, have your shoes on. Umaklechem biyedchem. V'chaltem oto b'chipazon, and eat them b'chipazon shel shchinat adon ha'olam. Biglal sherachamim v'nei Hashem lachemhu. And he says the chipazon just gave us a third possibility. The chipazon wasn't the chipazon of Mitzrayim, it wasn't the chipazon of the Jews. The chipazon over here, the one who suddenly very quickly got involved in history, was God. And it says the chipazon is the chipazon of God. If we look at the Mechilta in source 17, it presents all three possibilities. V'chaltem oto b'chipazon, ze chipazon Mitzrayim. Ata omer kein, o eino ele b'chipazon Yisrael. Who is it? Is it the Egyptians moving quickly or the Jews moving quickly? Kishu omer v'lecho b'nei Yisrael lo yechortz kelev l'shono, hari chipazon Yisrael amor. It implies that it's the Jews. Hamani mekayim v'chaltem oto b'chipazon, ze chipazon Mitzrayim. You eat it. Why chipazon? So it's turning chipazon into a moment. It's the moment that the Egyptians are running around, which, by the way, is interesting, because that would imply even after midnight, even though it's trying to say that's the halacha of midnight, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Okay, so let's continue. Yeah, ata omer kein. O einu elo chipazon Mitzrayim kishu omer kigor shu Mitzrayim harei chipazon Mitzrayim amor umat tamad lo mich bichipazon ze chipazon Yisrael aba chanan mishum rilazer omer ze chipazon shchina. This is the shchina. So I just want to point something out about this. Okay, that's exactly what I want to point out. That's exactly what I want to point out. God created, and when God creates, that was a long, long time ago, God creates and he makes certain separations. God separates between the water and the water. God separates between heaven and earth. And the creation itself involves various separations. Midnight is this God getting involved suddenly. Maybe the chipazon also is the suddenly. The sudden God getting involved. And after the first nine plagues were performed by Moshe and Aaron, so the tenth plague is performed by God himself. Precisely at midnight, God comes and God again makes a distinction, sort of like by creation itself. But at this point, the distinction is between the Jews and the non-Jews, between the Jews and the Egyptians, or between those who feel part of the destiny and those who don't feel part of the destiny. And it's at that moment, this sudden involvement of God in history. I think that's what the way it's describing it will be here. We're not going to get to look at the source inside, but your homework is going to be source 19, a long comment of the Nitziv. But the Nitziv is going to end up saying that these three opinions are not contradictory, that all three of them are true. And that part of celebrating Pesach is recognizing all three of them. It's recognizing the upheaval, the sudden upheaval of Egypt, and therefore it involves punishment of evil. Sometimes people question the whole problem of tzaddik v'ralo, why you have a righteous person and bad things happen. But people can also question rasha v'tovlo, why you can have somebody very wicked and good things happen. And over here, something happened right then, and that is that the Rishaim got their punishment. So you suddenly had a Gilui Shechina. You suddenly had God standing in front of you, which it's the Chipazon of Egypt because of their being punished, but it's the Chipazon of the Shechina entering into this world, making this distinction, which we had not seen really, you know, on this kind of level since, and you can argue with me, Stone, and you can, which is really a foreshadowing of what's happening over here. You can argue with me some other, you know, floods and things like that. But over here, we have God coming in and making a distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians, and that is the chipazon of the Shechina. But of course, there's also the chipazon of the Jews who eventually leave. And part of what we're noticing over here is that leaving itself is a process. And I want to end today with my favorite Targum Yonatan. I know it's very hard to say my favorite. This is my favorite Targum Yonatan. It's not my first time. It's not my second. All my Targum Yonatans I love the same. Okay, my mother's happy now. Source number 20. Source number 20. When we get to Har Sinai, Atem Ra'item. This is God tells Moshe to tell the Jews. Atem Ra'item Asher Asiti LeMitzrayim. You saw what I did to Egypt. Vesedchem Al Kanfei Nisharim VaViyetchem Elai. I placed you on the wings of eagles and I brought you to me. So what's the pshat in the pasuk? Well, we have a metaphor. The metaphor is the wings of eagles, right? We took you out on that. We took you out on the wings of eagles and took you straight here. Eli, you saw what I did to Egypt and you saw that I brought you over here to Har Sinai. So the Targum, we'll read 22. Again, the pseudo-Yonatan. It's not really Targum Yonatan. Atem ra'item ma'asher asiti l'mitzrayim. V'nasati etchem al ananim. Remember we saw we're waiting for the limousine, we're waiting for the ananim? So listen to this description. I sent you the ananim. Kimo al kanfei nisharim. It was as if you were on wings of eagles, saying that's a metaphor. I mean, we understood it's a metaphor. I took you min Ramses, v'hovalti etchem l'makom beit hamikdash. I took you from Ramses directly to the place of the Beit HaMikdash, La'asot Sham Pesach, in order for you to do the Korban Pesach there by the Beit HaMikdash. Uvuhu Laila, and once you brought the Korban, Hishafti Etchem L'Ramses, I took you back to Egypt. Umisham Karafti Etchem L'mod Torati, and from there I brought you here in order to study the Torah. Now, I hope you all realize that this is absolutely pshat. But I just have to explain what pshat means. This is pshat, and that's why I like it. I know normally some of us are very, very literal-minded, which is just so tedious, and you got to get past that. And the only thing that interests you as far as truth is what actually happened. And there's a certain value in that. But notice that this verse was metaphorical, and the metaphor over here is the wings of eagles. So right away you know that we're dealing with some kind of a metaphor. The Targum Yonatan, or as again, pseudo-Yonatan, it's not really Yonatan, he let his imagination run wild. He went crazy over here. But he identified something which was true. What he identified over here is the emotional state of the Jews at that time, or the experience that they had experienced at that moment. So let me ask you, is somebody's emotions that they feel, is there any truth involved in emotions, or you're all so scientific that we're all biological beings and emotions of no significance whatsoever? What he's telling us is that experientially that night, God transported us. That first moment of redemption is when we sat down with our families Rav Soloveitchik has a very interesting comment about this. He says, slaves are people who don't really have connections with children. There's no yichus when it comes to slaves. Slaves are not allowed to tell testimony. They're the posel edus. Slaves have no sense of time, because what you don't do today, you'll do tomorrow. So God is very specific now. And this time, you're going to do this. And this time, you're going to sit with your children. And this time, we end up telling over the story of leaving. All of these are aspects of leaving Egypt. All of those are aspects of giving us liberty. These are aspects of setting us free. Which means that night in Egypt, we became free. We didn't leave yet. We had Geulat Mitzrayim, but we didn't have Yetziat Mitzrayim. So how do I describe Geulat Mitzrayim without Yetziat Mitzrayim? So the question now is, but where was I experientially? And this is what God was trying to do. God was trying to liberate us. So how does he liberate us? So the Jews serving God for the first time in a long time, if ever, how did they feel at that moment? What was their emotional truth at that moment? It's as if they were sitting by the Beit HaMikdash. It's as if they were sitting in Yerushalayim, which was built, and they were sitting by the Beit HaMikdash. That's what they experienced. So how dare all of you say that this isn't pshat? Because you're so focused on other kinds of considerations. What the Targum Yonatan is telling us, what they felt at that moment, they felt they were sitting by the Beit HaMikdash. They felt that all the promises were going to come true. They felt they really were going to end up in Israel. They felt they were really going to sit there. They felt it's all true. They're going to serve God. And they felt it that night, because that's what liberation is. It's true they didn't leave until the morning. It's true they don't get to Har Sinai much later. And it's true they don't get to Israel much later. And it's true they don't build the Beit HaMikdash much later. But it's also true that that's what they felt. And that's what Pesach is. Pesach has been experienced by Jews in thousands of years, in thousands of situations. We've experienced it in poverty. We experienced it in wealth. We experienced it in persecution. We experienced it in freedom. And whenever Jews experience Pesach, they take their families, they take their children, and they take them back to what it was like to be Egypt. And we see ourselves as if we were slaves. And then through the Pesach Seder, at some moment, we become free. And at that moment we become free, we're no longer sitting in whatever city or place that we happen to be sitting in. At that moment we became free. And as we continue, we break out in song because we feel we were just freed. We say the Hallel. And then we start talking about Yivne Beito Bekarov. We start talking about building the Lashon HaBa Yerushalayim. And suddenly we get transported from wherever we are, and the goal of the Pesach Seder is to end up in Egypt. So the Targum Yonatan says, so they ended up in Egypt that night. That's where they were. And then the Seder ends, and they go back to eat, and they have to go back. But why do they have to go back? We have to go through the rest of the narrative. We still have to leave. We still have to go. But we were free that night. So what does it really mean, free? So he's telling us the experiential truth of being free means they felt as if they were on wings of eagles. They felt as if they were sitting by the Beit HaMikdash, and they felt as if they just now served God by the Beit HaMikdash, which is that moment they were part of the future, and they believed that everything was possible. Part of being a slave is not believing in the future. Part of being a slave is that you were tormented by the past. The past dominates your present. Your present cannot imagine the tomorrow being any different from yesterday. So your yesterdays control everything about you. But the person who can believe in the future, that person becomes free. Because that person believes that just because something bad happened yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before for hundreds of years doesn't mean tomorrow is going to happen the same way. And the Jews sitting in Egypt knew tomorrow is going to be different. And how do they know this? Because God said, put your coats on, get your walking sticks in hand, put your shoes on, because in the morning we're leaving.